C1A. Number 4B.
It's showing that at that point, you see, we say, for instance, what shall we say? Say, for instance, in spirit. Say, yes, the spiritual facts are the only real facts. And I state the spiritual fact in its principle. But what does it imply? Principle must always speak through its ideas. What does it imply? And that opens the realm of this statement. And unless we don't draw the implications of a principle, if we don't draw the implications of the principle, we never enter the realm of this principle. Just, for instance, we said before, what did we say? That the spiritual fact is the only real fact. There are facts of reality. Spirits also may say, well, we shall put the spiritual first. See, the second day of creation separates and says, separates the waters above from the waters beneath. And so we say a general statement, we state that in its principle and say the spiritual is the utmost and the foremost. But what does it imply? Does it imply to us, for instance, that therefore we give to the principle as much time as we naturally can? Do we make use of our time so that to the utmost under ordinary circumstances we give really to the spiritual its first place? So we imply that statement to time and say, in our life, do I really put the spiritual first in my time? Do I put the spiritual first in my energies? Or do I divert my energies for all sorts of things, and in the last point comes the spiritual? Do I use my spirit, my material resources in the first place for the furtherance of the spiritual, or for something else? Do I use my energies, my consecration, my affections in the first place for the spiritual fact and not for something else? That is what she says here. She can't say it so bluntly as I do it, but she says it and says, material belief is very slow to acknowledge what the spiritual fact implies. We are rather quick to accept what the spiritual fact states. Say, yes, naturally, the spiritual is the only real and the only true and the only substantial. But do we draw the implication and therefore give to that spiritual in the first place all what we have in terms of time, energy, resources, means, affections, consecration, and so on? If not, we are not fulfilling the law of atonement. And if not, we are not entering the realm of love. We are not. See, that's atonement. Atonement is doing things. Here, in spirit, it is doing that separation, that turning away from a material goal and material interest, and turning to a spiritual goal and spiritual interest. But that is stated in its principle. What does that principle imply? It implies that everything in our life must make that turning. Can you see that? That it is not enough to say, oh, I know now what the second day of creation is. I'm very glad I know it now. That's fine, I know it. It's separation. It's putting first things first. Well, that's very nice, but it's not atonement and Eucharist. Atonement and Eucharist says, all right, then do it. Then do it, but not only in your thought. Then do it with all what you have. Put your life, put your energy, put your desire, put your resources, put your time, put your energy, put all that first in that which matters, and not first in that which don't matter, which doesn't matter at all, which never helps us over the grave. It's asking ourselves, what helps us over the grave? What pushes us into the newness of life? Does it, if we spend our time and energy and love and affection and resources for something which is not in the line of spiritual goals? That's atonement Eucharist. And you know, the moment one begins to do that, the measure one can, the measure of our ability, one begins to understand Jesus' life before one doesn't. One can read that gospel from beginning to end, from end to the beginning, and so many times, it just doesn't make a real hit. But when one begins just a little bit, as we do that a little bit, that all what one has, all what the spiritual facts imply, if we make that the center and circumference of our living, one begins to taste the life of Jesus. One begins to taste where reality lies. But else one doesn't. Else it is a theory. It's the theory of atonement. But it doesn't do a thing. It doesn't live, and it doesn't bring us higher understanding nor higher demonstration. That's atonement. That's atonement here which says, well, material belief is slow to acknowledge what it implies. So often people come along and say, why didn't you ever tell me this and that? Well, it's usually something which we have told 100 times, but they never draw the conclusion. Now, we can't draw the conclusion, nor can the textbook draw all the millions conclusions for everyone that the spiritual fact implies. That's not the use of a textbook. The use of a textbook is just to state that it's not enough to state the spiritual fact, but it's necessary to see the implications of a spiritual fact. Implications are that which we can draw from a spiritual fact. And that commands sure entrance into the realm of love. But I come back to my eye and to my ear. In order to be able to enter into that, through that small gate, we come to life where Paul says, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is before us. It really looks like a contradiction to run a race and be patient. Usually if one runs a race, one is not very patient. But it's so typical. It must be a race. It must be a race in the way that it says, let's put all our energies, all our resources, as far as we can, as far as it doesn't hurt the oil and the vine, as far as it doesn't hurt our human obligations. Let's put everything into that race. Let's put together all the energies and time and consecration and thought and energy and resources and life and everything into that it. But let's be clear that spirit unfolds. And therefore it is a gradual process which step by step unfolds, and therefore that race in which we lay all our weight, all our true spiritual weight, is a race that is run with patience. But let's put away the false weight, those false interests, all those tiddly bits and those fiddling things which divert our interest, which diverts most of our time and energy and resources to anything else, which just doesn't save the world, which just isn't any help to the world, which just isn't any help to us either. Let's lay aside every weight that is too heavy, that sidetracks us to put everything into the right goal. See how atonement seems to be a sturdy chapter. But it drives us towards perfection. That's why it is a lovely chapter. So we come to truth. If truth is overcoming error in your daily walk and conversation, see, it's a daily walk. It doesn't say if once truth is overcoming an error in you, you have it. It's daily. Every day brings it anew. You can finally say, I have fought a good fight. I have kept faith because you are a better man. See, with truth, manhood comes out. This is having part in the at one man with truth and love. Just as in mind as truth, we have that at one man. So it comes here again. Now we have part. We are a better man. So here we see that through that line of through the subtones of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, through that turning and turning and turning constantly away from false interests and false goals, through putting everything into the right scale. That if we do that, that this makes us another man, which Christians call a better man, which the worldly man may call a fool, but that doesn't matter, because foolishness before man is usually wisdom before God. We become a better man, a better Christian man. And so, lastly, she sums up that thing and says in the tone of love, if the disciple is advancing spiritually, he's striving to enter in. See, you get again that tone of atonement, he's striving to enter in. He puts something into the scale, just doesn't take it as a half-timer, just doesn't take it as something which I do if here and now I have a little time over where I don't know what to do, then I take the textbook. That's not atonement. He constantly turns away from material sense and what that material sense implies and looks towards the imperishable things of spirit. That's our hope, that we have our gaze always on the high goal. If honest, he will be in earnest from the start and gain a little each day. You see again that gradual unfoldment. Again, a little each day, and we hardly can recognize each day what we have gained. But looking back after a year or 10 years, we see what we have gained, and that we have gained every day something. And gain a little each day in the right direction, till at last, see again, at last, just as Jesus first made concession, but at last he paid no homage to material things. Here too, by gaining each day a little bit, until at last he finishes his course with joy. Then that whole sense of atonement, of sacrifice, self-denial, is turned into joy. Through that sense of spirit, where we turn away and turn away and turn away from the false interest, from the false goals, from false attainments, and look towards the imperishable things of spirit. So, what did we see in this second subject? We saw that spirit demands of us and impels us to spiritualize. So, taking part in the good, that spirit impels us to choose right by turning away from a material goal and turning towards a spiritual goal. How? Through the seventh sub-tone. How? By first acting according to the impulsions of spirit. Putting first things first. That was the command of Jesus to obey. To put first things first. Then we say, but how can we do that? How can we how can we give substance to that choosing? And we see that we can only unfold it and develop it through an inward worship and not through a ritualistic worship, not through something external, but through something internal. And as we do worship that thought and that desire to put things first, to put first things first, we come to the subtone of soul where we gather that strength to reject any temptation which wants to divert us from reaching that goal. And so we swerve not, we give not in to the temptations of serving another goal. So sticking to the spiritual goal brings us to the sense of principle where we ask ourselves, well, in which way and how far shall we stick to the spiritual goal? Only by confessing and stating its spiritual fact, or by drawing conclusions from that? By drawing by having, or can you say, drawing its implications from it and see what the implications are in every detail of our life. That choosing first, that putting first things first, and loving to put first things first, and not swerving in putting first things first. We must do that in every phase of our life. We must do that when we manage our efforts and energies and time and resources and love and affection, that is always directed to the ultimate goal. And in doing that, we lay off the burden. We lay off the false burdens, the heavy burdens that distract life into a material channel. And if we do that day in and day out, and in the measure we do that, we become another man, which is called a better man, a more Christian man. We are a better man. And that is our hope, because it shows from day to day, from year to year, that we come closer and closer, step by step, to the spiritual ultimate, which we can't evade anyhow. And so we have a sense of love that we will reach the goal. That in this way, that going the way which Jesus went, we will reach the goal. It may not be here, but hereafter. But we have started on the way, and we know the way, and we know where the way goes. Now, this brings me right to the time where I want to leave you. And next time, I'm sorry I couldn't take the third subject, so we will do it next time with the others. Well, goodbye.